All right, how's everybody doing? It is Monday, July 6th. Hopefully everybody had a very safe and healthy and fun 4th of July. Everybody stayed socially distant. Everybody didn't blow themselves up with fireworks, hopefully. So you're all watching the show here. Of course, I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com. You are watching Chicago Music Revealed. I am also the Director of Entertainment and Programming at the Epiphany Center for the Arts, soon to be opening Epiphany Center for the Arts. Coming up in September, September 1, we're going to put tickets on sale very shortly for all of our different music series. So get all of the information as we announce it. As I always tell everyone, EpiphanyShy.com, EpiphanyShy.com. We look forward to seeing everyone in person in a very COVID-safe environment. Also, good news, big news, Andy's has been opened on a limited, obviously, capacity basis. So they are open on a limited capacity basis. And then we also have the Green Mill open, limited capacity basis. I've heard that things are going very well. We're actually going to have Frank Catalano on tomorrow, 5:30, special programming note, 5:30 tomorrow. Frank Catalano's on for a special early hit with Frank. And then we're going to have our guest at 6:15, Derek. And I don't have the notes in front of me. But anyways, we're going to announce everything right after this show. But anyways, Catalano is playing at Andy's coming up this coming weekend. Yeah, this coming weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I believe is what it is. So we're going to talk to Frank all about that. And then great news, just heard over the weekend, Wayne Siegel, Joe Siegel, the Jazz Showcase, they are opening up in a very COVID-safe environment, very limited seating this Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday with the great Dee Alexander and her group. They're going to be in there and they're going to be performing. Jazz Showcase opening back up since 1947, second oldest jazz club in the world. They're going to be back in business. So we're starting to get things happening, starting to get things open back up. Thank goodness. But of course, everyone, please wear a mask. Please stay safe. We cannot have a spike and then everything shuts down again. It will defeat the purpose of all of this. So, all right, now, that's all of the stuff I have to say as far as plugs, as far as talking about the clubs, because we got to get into this interview now. I had John Dorhauer on my show when I was doing the weekly, what was it called? Talking Jazz. I can't even remember. This is episode 67, by the way, Chicago Music Revealed. So when we were doing the Talking Jazz show, John was like episode 148, and he came down to the office, and we talked all about his band, the Eisenberg Uncertainty Players, and they have a brand new recording out. And that's why we're having John back on the show now, and we're going to talk all about that. And the new recording is called Gradient. And John, he is on the phone, live and in person. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Mike. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. It's fun to catch back up, even in this virtual world. At least you're releasing music. You're releasing new music, and you know, we talked back in February when you were on the show, on the Talking Jazz show, about the Eisenberg Uncertainty Players. It's Monday. I'm going to screw that name up probably 10 more times. So everyone watching, just deal with it, okay? I don't need any comments on that one. So, but we talked all about the band and the history of the band, which we'll focus a little bit on. But you've got this brand new recording called Gradient, and it features 9 original tunes, I believe. And then you also took on Gustav Mahler's Third Symphony in this entire piece? I mean, how does all of this work together in a big band format?
That's a good question, and I don't know that I have a good answer for it. But the band Eisenberg Uncertainty Players does all my original music, and it's a mixture of compositions and arrangements. We wanted to focus mostly on compositions, if for no other reason that we didn't have to worry about licensing out any music for which we didn't own the rights. And the one arrangement that we did select was one that's in the public domain. So it's at least partly functional is why that appears on the album. But we wanted a good showcase of the amazing musicianship in the band. We wanted to make sure everybody had a chance to be featured, but also kind of showcase the wide range of music and stylistic influences that we have as a band and that I have as a writer. Because I think other than the fact that we do all original music, what sets us off from other large jazz ensembles is that we kind of run the gamut as far as, like, sometimes we sound like a conventional big band, Other times we sound like a rock group. Other times we'll sound like a pop act. And we like to like keep things all over the place. And I feel like the new record kind of intentionally veers all over the map.
Well, you know, by the way, there's a great review by our reviewer, Harar, and is up on ChicagoJazzMagazine.com right now. So I encourage everyone to go check that out. So why don't we talk a little bit about the band first before we get into all of the ins and outs of the compositions? I mean, just give us the 30,000-foot synopsis. How did you put the band together, and why do you call it the Eisenberg Uncertainty Players?
So the name is really nothing more than a Breaking Bad reference.
I love that.
there's not much more to it than that. When the band started in 2011, the show was, I think, either in its second or third season. And so it was kind of a critical darling, but not near the cultural phenomenon that it would become in its later season. So it was a little more subversive of a reference at the time. Mm-hmm. We've stuck with it. And I'm proud of the name. I think it kind
That's
of encapsulates our weirdness. And as far as the music and what we do as an ensemble, as I mentioned before, it's all my original music. And we, again, like to do a lot of different things, but we like to plan live shows around very specific ideas. So when I was on the podcast mm-hmm. that you did last year, we were talking about the Led Zeppelin Houses of the Holy performance.
That's right. Yep.
That we were doing. So we did for Fulton Street Collective's Jazz Record Art Collective series, we took Led Zeppelin's Houses of the Holy album, and I did original arrangements of every song cover to cover. And so we like to do kind of off the wall, but also ideas that will appeal to more unique audiences mm-hmm. in what we do. So it is original music, but original music written to kind of pique people's interests.
Well, and you guys, you also have a lot of younger up and coming players in the band, as opposed to like some of the established big bands in town where, you know, I mean, some of the top guys are in the band. You have some of the up and coming soon to be top guys in the city in the band. And sure. And talk a little bit about that, how you kind of, you know, put the band together, because, you know, getting people together for even a quintet is a nightmare sometimes, let alone rehearsing it. So now you've put 18 people, 17 people together, and you're rehearsing original music, and then you're getting them on the same page where you're going to actually go and record it. I mean, what was the process that you had putting the band together like this?
So we've been playing since 2011, and I think there's only five of us that have been in the band since then. People leave because they move out of town, they get new jobs and other commitments, and so the personnel's kind of evolved over time. But around the time when we went to go to do the album, I felt really happy about the personnel that we had, and felt that I'd written music that featured the strengths of those players adequately. And so it felt kind of right to go in and commit what we'd done to recording. And we actually don't rehearse a whole lot as a band. We do a couple monthly performances, or at least we did when people were right. performing regularly. And one of them was at this bar in Wicker Park called Phyllis's Musical Inn, where mm-hmm. we would play the second Sunday of every month. And it's a very low-key gig, and I realized that we could just literally read music on the bandstand, and it would go over just fine with everybody. And so rather than having regular rehearsals, we would have these monthly gigs that kind of function as rehearsals and reading sessions. And so over several years, all the music then ended up on the album was stuff that I would bring into those gigs. And then once we got the studio booked, then we scheduled a couple of rehearsals specifically for polishing up these pieces that we've been playing live for in some cases a number of years, just to make sure that everything was fine-tuned and all the little details were lined up. But I mean, getting 17 people together for a performance is a near impossibility, let alone trying to coordinate regular rehearsals. And so that's kind of how I've tried to balance and manage that.
Yeah, and
the years.
By the way, Phyllis's Musical Inn, I mean, they've been around. I remember playing a gig there back in like 1995 or something, because the Bop Shop was across the street at one point. And it's still there. It's still funky. It's a great hang, and it's fun to go there. So, I mean, when we get back to normal times, I encourage everyone listening and watching this to go check them out. Of course, get all the information at huplayers.com, including the new recording, Gradient. Now, let's talk a little bit about the tunes that are on Gradient, because, you know, I took a quick listen to some of the tracks, and, I mean, I'm familiar with the band, but some of these tunes, some of this sounds a little bit different than what I was expecting, because it's obviously got the big band style in there, you know. But then, you, to your point, it also gets funky. I'm almost hearing a little Snarky Puppy in there, some different things like that, where there's some funky stuff, some open blowing sections, and then a traditional big band sound as well. I mean, do you sit down when you're writing this stuff and conceive, especially like this kind of a recording, did you have to sit down and think about each tune and say, how am I going to write this, and I don't want this tune to sound this way because it might sound too much like the last tune, and then I'm putting 9 or 10 tracks on a recording, and I don't want them all sounding the same, but I don't want to sound like it's not cohesive either. I mean, there has to be a lot of planning involved.
Sure. So I think without exception, all the music that appears on the album was written before I had the concept for the album itself. Although once I knew we wanted to do a recording, then I like looked over all of our book and tried to pick tunes that I thought would work well together and showcase our skills and our range. Although the most recently written songs are the last four on the album, and those kind of work together as a unit. And so the idea for the album kind of generated from those. And that's a piece called The Basketball Suite.
Okay.
And so it's a four movement piece where each movement is inspired by a different trend in the modern NBA. And they're musically.
I love it.
Yeah. And that, I think that's a good example of, again, we try to think outside the box as far as like coming up with stuff that's unique, but will also appeal to unique audiences. Mm-hmm. And so finding ways to reach out to fans of basketball, for example. Musically, it's very influenced by pop and fusion elements. Like they're all kind of hook and groove based tunes. But they're arranged or written in a form that kind of goes against the grain as far as pop and even jazz conventions would expect. And so I'm trying to write something that is immediately accessible and hooky, that's going to rope the listener in, but also kind of be presented in a way that's conducive to repeated listenings, so that you can't just listen to it and feel like you got a sense of everything that's going on just in the first listen, you know. So like it's supposed to draw you in but then keep you there.
I think there's a lot there's a lot to what you're saying, because I mean it especially when you get into larger ensembles and you're writing, there's so many different layers, right? So yeah, you're right. You suck them in. And then really, if you sit and listen to the track 4 or 5 times, shut the lights off, like really focus on what's happening, there's a lot of different textures and layers to what's happening, just surely because there's 17 people playing, but also because of the arranging style that you have, right?
Yeah. And I do come from a jazz writing and performing background, but a lot of my training comes from classical. And so I feel like one thing that is unique to my approach from other jazz writers is like when I'm writing for a jazz big band, I try not to think of presenting the ideas or orchestrating them in a way that a jazz big band composer would. And so I'm trying to think of creating different colors by pairing like the tenor with a muted trombone or just trying lots of different combinations. So very rarely am I writing where the saxes have one idea, the trumpets have one, and the trombones have another idea. And I think that's where the layered element of the music comes from. I think a lot of that also comes from my appreciation for pop music, which I think well-produced pop music tends to be very layered and have a lot of subtlety and nuance to it. And I try to convey some of that in my approach to writing for horns.
Well, and that brings up a great point and brings me over to this, the Mahler's Third Symphony that you rearranged and put on this recording. But because of your age and you came up, I mean, you were influenced by pop music and funk and probably some hip hop. And then also you've got classical in there. You've got the jazz elements in there. I mean, it's surely because I think a lot of musicians, in fact, I know a lot of musicians who play quote unquote jazz, listen to all styles of music just because you're inundated with it every place you go. So it's just in your system. So then when you're writing or you're performing, I mean, all of those styles are going to be part of what your sound is just because you've been influenced by them for so many years. So leading into to Mahler's Third Symphony, talk a little bit about that. That must have been somebody that you studied from an arranging standpoint and a compositional standpoint that really affected you.
It was. When I was in grad school, I took a class solely devoted to Gustav Mahler and his writing. And that really kind of turned me on to his music, and specifically his Third Symphony. That was the piece that I had to present on for the class. And so I really kind of dug into the piece in great detail and kind of fell in love with it. And I don't remember at what point I came up with the idea to adapt it for big band. But the original recording has just this inherent heaviness to it that I always thought lended itself to like almost like a heavy metal approach. And so that's where the arrangement kind of got its inception, where like take the original but add even more layered heaviness to it. And so there's a lot of heavy metal groove throughout the main sections of the piece. Very little is added as far as like new musical ideas, but the main point of the arrangement is presenting it in just like a different stylistic vibe. So I was literally taking the original score and orchestrating parts for different members of the group, but kind of pairing it with either a heavy metal groove through a lot of it, or there's a reggae section at another point.
No, I mean it works wonderfully. It caught me off guard at first. I was like, whoa, wait a minute. And then you're like, well, yeah, wait, this is like, this works, man. This is very cool. All right. So everybody should head over to huplayers.com, pick up the new recording Gradient. Now I know because of the COVID situation, we were talking about having you perform and do the concert release version of the recording over at the Epiphany Center for the Arts. But because of the situation and because you have 17 people in the band, it would not be necessarily COVID safe with anybody in the room. So right now you're kind of in a holding pattern. You've got it out. I know that you're working with Two for the Show, incredible company. So they're pushing it out for you.
Yeah.
So what's the reaction been? I know with our, you know, review on ChicagoJazzMagazine.com, but I mean, is it getting out there? Are people consuming this? And what are you hearing back from other parts of the country?
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of positive feedback so far on it. In addition for Two for the Show, we're also working with Ben Schultz of Schultz Production out in LA. He's promoting it to radio stations throughout the country, and we've been played on coast to coast there. And in fact, from what I've found from what Ben sent me, I know that all 10 tracks on the album have been played at least once on radio stations across the country. We've been very pleased with the feedback and response that we've been getting from that. And of course, we're dying to play it live because that's obviously a vital component to it. But even without that, I mean, I think the word's starting to get out about it.
So talk a little bit before I let you go, because I want you to make sure that you talk a little bit about the guys in the band. You wrote, you composed it, everything, but did you play? You didn't play on this. You were just composing, arranging, and conducting, correct? And then you have the guys in the band that are reading and playing all of this.
Yes, my performance credits on the album are limited to interior piano playing on one of the tracks, and then I sing, whistle, and snap along with the rest of the band on a couple of the tracks. But I don't play my main instruments at all on the album.
So talk a little bit about the guys in the band. This is the regular band, I would assume, that you see at Phyllis's or would see at a concert release.
Yes. Yeah. And this particular formation of the band, most of the guys and gals in the band have been playing with the group for several years at this point. I mean, phenomenal musicianship throughout the band, but I think a lot of that comes from the rhythm section that we have. So we have John Wenzel on drums, Dan Parker on bass, Stu Seal on piano, and Chris Parsons on guitar. Chris and Dan have been, or two of the members that have been with the band ever since the beginning. But the rhythm section as a whole has played with each other for a number of years now, and they've really developed a very solid rapport with each other, and are great at intuitively communicating with each other. But they're all fantastic readers as well, and that allows me as a composer and arranger to take a lot of risks and free liberties that I wouldn't otherwise feel comfortable doing. In the trumpet section, the trumpets are led by Adam Roebuck on lead trumpet, who's an amazing lead player who I actually worked with when he was an undergrad. I was teaching at Elmhurst College, and so it's been really cool to see his progress and development. And then we also have John Rarick, Bennett Hines, and Emily Kuhn, and they're all fantastic players, readers, and improvisers. In the trombone section, we have Michael Nearpass playing lead, and then Josh Torrey, Andrew Meyer, and Dan DeCesar playing bass bone for the group. All of them, again, incredibly talented musicians and gifted improvisers. And also they do a lot of, as well as the saxes, a lot of really interesting extended techniques, which is featured in the Four Sides of the Circle track on the album. So like, for example, Josh Torrey does a lot of very cool effects, but one that he does is he has the ability to sing and play simultaneously. So he creates multiphonics by singing through the trombone while playing it. And so the melody for that Four Sides track was written to feature him and Matt Beck in our sax section that can do that technique as well.
That's wild.
I know. It's absolutely insane. And then in the saxes, they're led by Natalie Landy on lead alto and soprano, Kelly Dorhauer on alto, Dan Burke and Matt Beck play tenor, and then James Baum on baritone saxophone. And there's some really challenging sax writing featured on the album. There's one in particular, Point Giannis, that has a really killing sax solo that they absolutely nail. And again, knowing that I have that outstanding musicianship to write for and great readers and improvisers really helps me as a writer and kind of has challenged me to push the envelope as far as what I can do and present to the band.
Well, and that really is a great point, because I think a lot of people that are watching this, if they're casual music fans, they're hearing, you know, big bands, they're hearing original compositions, but really you have to be conscious of who's in your band. You can't write where it's over their head and they're not able to play it. And it sounds like to me, all the players in your band rise to the occasion every time you write something, and probably you keep pushing the envelope, which pushes them, which gets them more motivated to play even better. So it's a great, it's kind of like a great continuous circle, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely been the biggest benefit of having that monthly gig at Phyllis's, where for the past 3 or 4 years, I've made it my goal to bring in at least one new thing each month. And in doing that so frequently, I felt like I've developed the capacity to figure out like what's going to work well and what's not. And if there is something that's going to be difficult, how can I present it in a way that will be maximally effective? Yeah. And just like anything you do in life, the more you do it, the more experience you get, the more comfortable you get at it.
At least that's the plan.
Yes.
That's the plan. All right. So everybody head over huplayers.com. Got to pick it up. It's a brand new recording called Gradient. Go read the review on ChicagoJazzMagazine.com. By the way, we're going to have Harrier on here on Thursday talking about all of the different recordings he reviewed. So that's ChicagoJazzMagazine.com. It is up right now. Go check that out. And, of course, head over to HUPlayers.com. John, congratulations on the new recording. And I cannot wait till we can finally have you guys. You and I were talking in May. Were we talking in May? No, we were talking in March, I think, April, about doing something in May and doing something as a CD release over at Epiphany. And, of course, none of that could happen because of our COVID situation. But now, as we're slowly moving out of it, hopefully sooner rather than later, we'll be able to actually see the band perform live and hear them live and actually present this in a great live setting. But until then, everybody can go check it out and pick up the recording. And all of the other, you have a couple other recordings up there too, right?
Yeah, we did another studio recording several years ago that's up on the website. And then we also have a live recording of a large scale piece that I did from a few years back that's on the website as well.
Yeah, it's a great website, and you can check everybody out. You can see everybody on there, and I'd encourage everybody to head over there. So, John, thanks so much for jumping on for a few minutes, and congratulations on the new recording, and hopefully we'll get to see you live in person sometime sooner rather than later.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Mike, and I can't wait to see you again in hopefully healthier circumstances.
Yeah, I agree. All right, man, have a good night.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thanks. All right, John Dorhauer, the Eisenberg Uncertainty Players, HUPlayers.com, Gradient, the new recording. It is something you need to hear. I know I say that on this recording, on the show all the time, but it's true. I mean, these are good recordings. And he's a Chicago composer. I believe he went to Roosevelt, if I remember correctly, from our last conversation. And I mean, it's great. Support live music any way you can. And right now, buying digital downloads and buying CDs and buying t-shirts from the different websites, that's the best way to support artists these days. Thank goodness Jazz Showcase, Andy's Green Mill, they're reopening. Winters is going to start doing live streaming. I've got to get that schedule from Scott because I know he's going to do some in-home live streaming to kind of get the Winters name up and running again before they start presenting live music over there. But, you know, everybody is making do with the way we have to do things to keep everyone safe but still present live music. So I encourage everyone, go support artists, go buy items as you can, go buy digital downloads. All of that goes back to the people that need it the most, which are the artists, the musicians, and the club owners. Don't forget the club owners. Go buy a t-shirt. Get out and see somebody play. Safe distance, wear a mask. Tomorrow, special program note that I mentioned earlier, 5:30 p.m., we are going to have Frank Catalano on. We're going to be talking all about his upcoming performance at Andy's Jazz Club, and I know he does stuff at the Green Mill all the time as well, so we're going to have him back on and talk about that. Actually, I haven't had Frank on yet. I just talk to him all the time, but I haven't had Frank on, so looking forward to that. And then at 6:15, we're doing a double session tomorrow. I'm going to do the first show at 5:30, take a 5-minute break, come back on. We're going to have Derek Gardner on, the great trumpeter. He is going to be on, and we're going to be talking all about his new release and everything he has going on with the live stream and all the interesting things. He's out of Canada, so that'll be an interesting conversation we have tomorrow. So all of the information at ChicagoMusicRevealed.com, ChicagoJazz.com. As I always tell everyone, be sure to stay safe, stay healthy, stay social distance, wear your mask. Please wear your mask. We want to be able to get out. We want to be able to see people again, experience people live and in person. The only way to do that is to stay safe, healthy, and away from everyone. Also, if you enjoy this, please like it, please share it. Please leave us a comment. We're over on Chicago Jazz Magazine's Facebook page today. Always a pleasure doing the show with everyone. Thanks to John Dorhauer again for being on the show. And as I always say, tomorrow, we've got to reboot my theme, man. We're on the way out. All right. As I always say, please tell a friend, tell your neighbors, call the grandkids. Tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, 6:15 second show, we will be back. Hopefully everybody stays safe. I will see you tomorrow on the next broadcast. See ya.